how fitting it is to sing that great song of freedom of, and of prayers for the land, for the people of Africa, as we honor this man of ours who served the people of Africa. There's a young man in our youth group whom I happen to know a little better than some of the others. He lives in my house. We debate many topics when I can get him to debate, and the one that caught me most recently was that he doesn't really like history. It troubles me, although I recall that I felt very much the same way at his age. I don't remember liking history very much myself, probably until I was well past adulthood and finally read Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, The Missing Pieces. Maybe my young man also senses something missing from the history he's taught. But I do hope he will come to see, as I have the longer I live, to deeply appreciate history, to appreciate the patience that it can give us, the perspective such that now I can see that youth's outrage at history also appears throughout history. Though I appreciate the reminder to consider what matters now, first and foremost. UUs tend to love our history, although I note lifelong UUs are particularly invested in the tradition, and folk who come to it often don't really even care. That's great. Nice. Good. You had some 1800s old preachers back there in New England. That's swell. What have you done for me lately? And that's because ours is a living tradition that seeks truth in the moment and in the unfolding of learning and reason. But at the same time, those who are raised UUs understand that with as much change as has passed through this tradition over the last 200 years, that it is the people and their teachings that moved things forward and that shaped our movement, that actually help us know who we are today. And so we learn from the past. Theodore Parker is one of the so-called three prophets of religious liberalism, as named by our greatest historian, Conrad Wright. These include William Ellery Channing and Ralph Waldo Emerson. And if you want a deep course in the spiritual heart of this tradition, of the Unitarian side in particular, you could do worse than this book, Channing, and you could do worse than these authors, Channing, Emerson, and Parker. The writings in that book in particular show all of the things in common of this era's thinker, of this era of Unitarian, that the sacred would be known directly, in the person, in nature, that the world being, however so conceived, nature, the oversoul, God, was a benevolent thing, that creation was good and gave us gifts that we could live in thanks for. They rejected a doctrine of hell. They emphasized reason greatly, and they believed that the moral laws as we came to know them would ultimately prove to be as predictable and sure as the physical laws of the universe. That which blossomed in us as do unto others as you would have them do unto you was a power like gravity or electromagnetism. And they do have something else in common. They were all Yankees. The early great biography of Parker is called Yankee Crusader. And so for just a couple of you today and only today, I will say I am a Yankee fan. As long as it's Theodore Parker, I guess I should say. Theodore Parker, who, as I told you, grew up in Lexington, just outside of the town of Boston, and because of his poverty, but also because of his brilliance, fought and clawed his way into all polite society. He could not afford to go to Harvard as a young teenager, as they would have sent him. Instead, he read the entire curriculum on his own. He was a brilliant scholar. That was his first work, a translator of German texts, of biblical criticism. By the time of his death, his was said to be one of the largest and most complete libraries in the entire country. As a young man, he had a conversion from the Orthodox tradition of his youth, inspired in part by Emerson and Channing, and came to have a radical view of the Bible and Christianity, much as you heard Scott describe. But he never left the church. He never wanted to be anything but a minister. And indeed, through his whole career, he showed perhaps the greatest knowledge of and understanding of the Bible and of Jesus than many of the preachers of his day. He was an incredibly prolific writer. Don't ask Theodore Parker to come and say a few words. In one instance, he literally wrote a book and stood there and delivered it. He was known in his day as a great moral agitator. First, from within the tradition of the church, preaching a new gospel of setting down superstition, of setting down the things of the past, and instead trying to find what would be the eternal heart of Christianity, indeed of all religion. As a member of the Transcendentalist group, he participated in the translating and sharing of the wisdom of the East as it came into the United States. Parker took very seriously the need for America to develop its own scholarship, its own theology, its own way of being religious and political that would be distinctly American and driven first and foremost by that great love of democracy. Direct self-government he called for. He called for it to be over all the people, for all the people, by all the people. Notice the all there, which didn't quite make it when it was later quoted in a most famous address in Gettysburg. Parker also gives us the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends toward justice, commonly ascribed to Martin Luther King. As time passed and he preached this doctrine, these new doctrines, this new way of understanding religion, he found himself gradually disinvited from every other church in town. The prominent Boston ministers of the day, most of them Unitarians, believed that his teaching would destroy religion. We had the closest thing we've ever had to a heresy trial as Unitarians, thanks to dear Theodore Parker. The Boston Association was the name of the group of the liberal clergy in town, and Parker had been among their number because of his training and background. When he began to preach such things as the transient and permanent Christianity, when he began to expand beyond the boundaries that had been previously given, as I said, they stopped inviting him to a church, and they actually hoped that he would just kindly go away. Would he please? He said no. And he said no until the end of his life, so that the Unitarian movement had to live with Theodore Parker pushing, pushing, pushing. And the result is that the status quo Unitarianism of his day would be unrecognizable to us. We are Theodore Parker's heirs. He left us an enormous legacy, embracing science, embracing scholarship, demanding the, quote, socialization of Christianity, which was to take the ethics and principles, this love your neighbor as yourself, this share everything among you, and to really apply that to society genuinely. He was a beautiful preacher and teacher of natural religion, of finding the divine among us in our natural world, and embraced early teaching of evolution and the fact of multiple religions. These are the good legacies that we've been given. But he also left us a few things that we are challenged with. From Parker forward, we had to include anybody that said they wanted to stay. And that has often created great tension and confusion sometimes about where we're going. And that confusion is a little bit of his gift as well. Although his writing is brilliant and stirring, it's intellectual, personal, interior. If you've come to say that everything that might evolve around a religion, its holy books, its teachers, its doctrines, its philosophies, you acknowledge those come and go over time. But what is left for the permanent then? What do we do? What should we actually read? What songs should we actually sing? And although Parker was popular, incredibly popular in his day, with 2,000 or 3,000 people coming to hear his sermons on Sunday mornings at the 28th Congregational Society. And his sermons and tracts printed and spread throughout the land, earning him that much more scorn and enmity from the powers that be, that characterized him as an infidel and an atheist and a destroyer of young characters. Okay. He was nevertheless very popular, spoke to the heart of the American spirit in many ways, but after he died, too young, the age of 50, his congregation lasted only about a decade longer. Because it was about you, it was about him, it was about ideas, it was about stirring us in some way, but what about the long haul? What about the institution? So from these prophets of liberalism, we've inherited one of our greatest challenges, which is how do we be a big group of people doing our work together? How far do we go in the pursuit of justice? And this is what Parker's real challenge is, as over time, he moved from trying to have a revolution from within the church to trying to have a revolution of sorts within society and politics itself, as he became one of the most ardent of the abolitionists. When we talked about Vedanta a week or so ago, the message was, do good in the world, follow the permanent ethical principles of our human spirit, and be released from the results. I don't think that applied to Theodore Parker. I think he was going to end slavery if he had to burn up all of New England along the way. Though, remarkably, and perhaps the thing I most treasure about him is that when you read him closely and hear the reports of his friends, he was known to be a charming fellow with a great sense of humor, which not every ardent abolitionist might have been. So I look at his example, right, of becoming ever more determined to take the spirit into the public realm, no matter what the cost, to face even physical hardship, even violence, as a possible cost of bringing freedom about. And where's my balance with that? How far do I go? He puts us in a very uncomfortable spot. And reading Parker's writing against slavery is one thing. We share the sentiment. I do. I read it. Yeah, right on. And then forget, wait, the liberal people of the day were mounting the arguments against Parker, not just the conservative folk, not just slaveholders. And to go back just that period of time and see how the well-meaning folk of the day could tell him, no, too fast, no, we have to be conciliatory, no, let's follow the fugitive slave law and all will be well. And I wonder, 50 years from now or 100 years from now, what will our grandchildren look back at that kind of writing and think, I can't believe they fought that so long. I mean, it took the liberal Boston Unitarian clergy 50 years to become anti-slavery. It practically took the war for that to happen. What are we not seeing in the discrepancy between the rich and the poor, or issues around immigration? How gay marriage 50 years from now, they will all be saying, like, I cannot believe they made such a big deal out of that. That's my prayer. That's one good reason to read history, is because stuff you cannot imagine being said was said and ultimately transcended. Parker's main point as the preacher of the abolitionist movement was that there is a law of humankind and there is a law of God, as he would have put it, and we are obligated to the latter. And that if the law, like the fugitive slave law or some other thing that would deny a person their basic freedom, the essence of democracy, then we must break that law. And that, more than any other thing, was what brought the scorn to Parker. When do we break the law about these matters? I read a great letter in a kind of an old collection of essays that would come, you know, once a year or something. It was called Little's Living Age. And in there, Parker and all his supporters were decried. It was like the Music Man. They were all going to start playing billiards, and the youth were going to be completely corrupted. And the exhortations, resist this teaching at all costs. I hope in the future we're read of a little more forgivingly than Parker's opponents about the things we're not seeing, about the freedoms we're not working for. And what about that taking to arms? What about that fact that sometimes the quest takes extraordinary sacrifice? With Veterans Day just passing, I wonder if we could harness some of that soldier energy for freedom, for justice. It would truly be moving forward through the ages. Parker could be fierce. His writing is fun to read if you like to watch somebody use their wit, tear somebody to shreds. But he could be strangely gentle too, as I read in a letter to a Southern slaveholder, where he takes the time in extended length to debate slavery, kind of man to man, as it were. A remarkable figure. And his core gift, I think, to us is this great emphasis that the American spirit is about freedom, is about justice, it is about reason. And I kind of want to be Theodore Parker. I think that's why I've always been drawn to him. I love the idea of dying with the biggest library. I love how much he loved to think and study and learn, the noblest example, I believe, and he was loved by his congregation. His last act after the thousands and thousands and thousands of pages he had written, though, was a letter to his congregation giving thanks for their support. But there are other ways. I don't really want to be like Theodore Parker, and this is the challenge when we face our heroes, right? There's the weakness in me that isn't as brave to stand up against injustice as he was. And there's also the fact that I don't want to write 2.5-hour intellectual sermons. I don't want to deliver them. I don't want to hear them. He burned himself out with his fire, his obsessive energy, his prolific writing. He was almost too learned and died at the age of 50, traveling in Europe to try and heal his tuberculosis, then called consumption. But buried in Florence after he escaped Rome at the very end, determined not to be buried there. His headstone reads, "The Great American Preacher." And I urge you to find his work, which is readily available and influencing us today. A great book from the UU Ministers Association Convocation on Ministry from the 80s is called The Transient and Permanent in Liberal Religion. His voice echoes still. And that book, by the way, edited by Dan O'Neill, among others, our former minister here. Parker's ripples coming into the present, and I hope you will seek him out. What I want most from him for us is that great dream of freedom for all the world's people, for the people of this country. His great emphasis on justice, equity, and compassion. But what I most hope we will carry in the face of this firebrand, or as the gift from this firebrand, is actually his simple faith and his simple optimism, which I share with you two short readings of Theodore Parker to conclude. He wrote, "To me, human life in all its forms, individual and aggregate, is a perpetual wonder. The flora of the earth and sea is full of beauty and of mystery, which science seeks to understand. The fauna of land and ocean is not less wonderful. The world which holds them both and the great universe that folds it on every side are still more wonderful, complex, and attractive to the contemplating mind. But the universe of human life, with its peculiar worlds of outer sense and inner soul, the particular faunas and floras which therein find a home, are still more complex, wonderful, and attractive. And the laws which control it seem to me more amazing even than the mathematical principles that explain the celestial mechanics of the outward world." With that spirit, then, he could write, even at the end, "The progressive development does not end with us. We have seen only the beginning. The future triumphs of the race must be vastly greater than all accomplished yet. In the primal instincts and automatic desires of humanity, I have found a prophecy that what we want is possible. and shall one day be actual. It is a glorious future on which I have set before your eyes and hopes. What good is not with us is before us, to be attained by toil and thought and the religious life. May we share his spirit and live unafraid as we build the world of justice. So be it. And let us share his words together, if you'll find 683.